Do you remember all the chat that there's been over the last week or so about Hilary Benn, his speech in favour of airstrikes in Syria? And many people said that his dad, Tony Benn, would be turning in his grave. We thought that we would have a discussion this morning about what parents do if their kids adopt totally different viewpoints. Will families always come first? And really interesting discussion, actually. I was speaking to Alex Kane, who was with us this morning, and the former Lib Dem MP, Len Budopik, and I asked Alex if he thought Tony Benn would have been disappointed.
I don't think he will be. I mean, I know that Ben was a member of the Stop the War coalition from the more or less the day and hour it started, with people like George Galloway, Jeremy Corbyn, and so on. I mean, it's also worth bearing in mind that when I think he was just 16 years old during the Second World War, he did sign up for the Home Guard. He trained for the Home Guard. He had no difficulty in accepting that there were times you had to stand up for values and for your country. I think, and having read about him and having met him a couple of times as well down the years, I think he's a man like all dads. I'm a dad as well. You know, you love your children no matter what, no matter how much they annoy you, no matter how much they disagree with you. It's part of life. It's part of growing up. So, no, I really don't. But I don't think Tony would have voted.
So what would you do, Alex, if your kids grew up to believe in values that you find offensive, that you find abhorrent?
I would accept it, Stephen, sometimes with difficulty. You know, you and I have talked about many things over the years. I write columns. I offend people every single day. All I want for my girls, Stephen, is that they feel strong enough and confident enough to say what they believe, but also strong enough and confident enough to stand over those arguments, not to be browbeaten by me or by anybody else into changing their opinions. I will challenge them. My eldest is 17. She has views which I don't agree with. I will challenge her. She will challenge me. It's part of loving your family. It's part of growing up. It's part of the everyday conversation we have. Lembert and I, the last time we disagreed with each other. I'm not going to suddenly make him an enemy. It's what we do. It's part of democracy.
Lembert?
That is an accurate assessment. I can give you a very personal example. I was very much against nuclear power when I was young. My father was a nuclear physicist. We had raging arguments about this. And my father tolerated it, never convinced me at the time. I have to confess, 6 years ago, I took on his point of view. It maybe took 30 years to get there. Perhaps that's what fathers and mothers have to do. They have to accept.
Did it affect your relationship, though, Lembert?
Pardon?
Did it affect your relationship with your father when you disagreed with him?
No, it didn't, because my father had a great ethos. It's more important to be right than to look right, which means sometimes you can be wrong for quite a long time. But if at the end of the day, the facts cause you to change your view, that's what we're here for. And that, I think, is the essence of the relationship between Tony Benn, Hilary Benn, and every other serious parent-child relationship. What's the point of growing up otherwise? Prince Philip one time said to me that young people were ignorant, but what's the point of education if they're not? This is exactly the same. The parents impart the information that they've got, their wisdom, as best they can, but you cannot simply download the files like the computers. And if you could, then I don't think the meaning of life and the journey of life would be anything like as interesting.
Yeah, it's a huge issue, Alex, isn't it, in terms of how much should you influence your kids? How much should you demand that your kids think like you?
Well, you shouldn't. My personal side of this is in 1974, my father was a very senior member of the Orange Order, a very senior member of the Ulster Unionists, much more important than I had ever been in my time with the party, Stephen. Very much opposed to Sunningdale, very much opposed to the power sharing agreement, very much back in the party line, was glad when Faulkner left and took others with him. I took the opposite view. I was about 17, 18 years old at the time. I said to my dad, I'm never going to join the Orange Order. And my dad was a former County Grand Master of the Orange Order. My uncle was a former County Grand Master. Big names in the Orange Order. I also told him, Dad, I have no difficulty whatsoever with the concept of power sharing, even if it involves nationalists. I believe in the quality of citizenship. And he was horrified, Stephen. We had huge blazing rows, and I only discovered after he had died, I was talking to my mom about him, and she said, remember that time back in 74, the whole Sunningdale thing? She said, your dad defended you when people attacked what you were writing in the newspaper, when they saw what you had said, and I used to send letters to newspapers at that stage. She said, your dad, even though he was against you, he defended you on every single occasion because he was actually proud that you actually stood up for your own beliefs.
But he never told you, Alex.
Oh, the thing is, he didn't tell me, Stephen.
Isn't that interesting?
Well, it is interesting. Well, you know as well, it's the adoption thing as well. And I know someone did say to him, my mum told me that it still upsets me. A family friend, in fact, a family relative has said, well, of course, Adelaide, that's my mum's name, Adelaide. You know, that's because Alex is adopted. He isn't really, you know, one of the our natural clan sort of thing. But yes, you're right, Stephen. He was a wonderful man, a loving man, a man who took huge risks to take me personally into his life. But he wasn't one of those warm, comfortable, you know, putting his emotions on a sleeve type of man. But it just... Because he encouraged me to have these arguments, he encouraged me to stand up with my beliefs. The fact he couldn't say it to me himself did worry me slightly. But then I have to say, Stephen, I look at my, particularly Megan, my 17-year-old, and there are times I just want to give her a big hug when we've had an argument and say, don't worry about it, sweetheart, it's just part of growing up. But I haven't done that. I don't know why. I don't know whether it's just fathers find it much more difficult to deal with their children than mums may do.
Well, actually, Alex, I'll come back to that. I'll come back to that in a second or two. It's also interesting, Limit, if you think about the, you know, the journey through life. The first 12, 13 years, you kind of, you know, you believe in what your mum and dad tell you, certainly the first 10, 11 years. And then you start to rebel, you start to question what they're saying. And then when you get a lot older, the truth is probably somewhere in between. They were half right. They were mostly right, right?
I think that's right. There isn't any monopoly on wisdom anywhere in the world. And sometimes it works the other way around, too. It seems to me that the lesson of life is to learn. I'm pretty sure my father voted Conservative for most of his life. And shortly before he died, he told me that in the last European elections that he ever voted in, he'd voted Liberal Democrat, which is, of course, the party I was in. I was moved and touched by that. And I'm sure that he told me, and he did that, as an expression of some kind of a faith in what I was doing. I'm actually thinking about it now. I'm quite moved by it. I haven't thought about that for many years. And maybe that's the best relationship, whether it's between Tony Benn and Hillary Benn or millions of families with parents and children in the world. If we listen and if we learn, then the collective gets better. And it's not about agreeing with the other person all the time. It's about having that cognitive ability to make decisions, which aren't always right to begin with. But if you want the truth, then you'll eventually find it if you seek it. And I think that's what a parent really wants for their child.
Alex, I want to come back to something you said earlier. You're not able to hug your daughter and tell her, don't worry, that's just part of growing up. What's that all about?
It's a personal thing. It goes back to the adoption thing, Stephen. As you know, you and I have had many conversations about this. I for all my public commentary and my writing and my sounding like a, you know, a guy who's fully in control of his emotions and things like that, I'm not. There are moments every day. It's a form of mild depression, but it's to do with my confidence. It goes to the very root of who I am. I still have this fear. I've told you before, I still sometimes wake in the middle of the night shaking in fear because I think someone's going to come and take me away again. And I know, bearing all that in mind, that I should be able to just put my arm around Megan, around any of the kids. I still find that difficult because... that's a personal... I don't think that's
see,
a general
thing.
The reason I'm
finding this intriguing, Alex, with you is because... I watch your tweets. I hear what you say about your children. And you are clearly incredibly proud to be a dad. That is very, very clear. You know, I see the loving pictures that you post on Twitter of you with your children. And so I'm astonished. I'm not judging you. I'm just astonished that clearly with you being such a good father... You can't reach out and hug them and tell them what you think.
It's inexplicable. I accept that, Stephen. And perhaps sometimes the posting the pictures is my way of saying to them, you know, in years to come when they look back and so on. It's just, I don't think it's typical of dads or even the moms. I think it's just me. There is that sense. I'm not a touchy for all of it. For all the facts that you phone me, we talk, and I do public meetings, I do television, all of that. On a one-to-one basis, I am still enormously shy. I still find touchy-feely, emotional stuff on the one that I can write about it. I can write about my adoption. I can write about all sorts of things in my life. But actually, that one-to-one, I still find hugely difficult. And, I mean, I am proud. I adore my kids, but they're still part of me. It's not that I'm not wanting to hug them. I do hug them. It's just the sense there are times I think I should just remember the fact that my dad didn't tell me at the time that he was actually quite proud of the fact that I stood up for my own beliefs against him, because he was a man capable of holding and sustaining an argument and making a very strong case.
Alex isn't alone in this. I wasn't adopted, but listening to your story reminds me of an occasion in my life. When I was 18 and I went to university to Bristol, so I left Belfast. And I wrote a letter, a handwritten letter to my mum and dad. And it's the only time in my life that I can remember that I ever told both of them that I love them. And it wasn't easy, because I'm not that great at feelings, even though I speak about them disordinately often on your programme. And you know what? I think they just knew anyway. And part of arguing and putting up with the differences and views from your children is understanding that disagreement isn't the same as a loss of love. And I think what Alex says is extremely insightful. If a parent really loves their child, they'll let the child make up their own mind, even when they think they're wrong.
Do you think this is there's a generational aspect to this, in terms of maybe the last generation found it slightly more difficult than the younger generation to express themselves to their children?
I don't think so. I feel that this is a genetic thing. I feel that children fight to be individual, everything from what they wear to being embarrassed about introducing their friends to their parents. I just think that's how we're designed. And it probably has to be that way, because otherwise we just end up exactly like our parents and society and the species doesn't progress.
I was going to say, yes, I would agree with that, Stephen. In my own case, my girls, they know I absolutely adore them. Even if I find it difficult, I'm sure you've been years to come, you know, when you push them on it, they would say, oh, you know, it could be a taciturn also, but we never doubted for a moment. It's just I don't do the touchy feeling. I came from a background, after I was adopted, my parents were middle-aged. My father was 53 when I was adopted. He was of that Second World War, remembering the First World War generation. And there was a sort of stiff upper lip. And it wasn't just middle classes. It was this sense you didn't wear your heart on your sleeve. And I think what has changed in maybe the past 20, 30 years, we see in the media, on television, radio, even in newspapers and magazines, we see much more of a willingness for people to talk about depression, to talk about sadness, to talk about mental difficulties, to talk about their own personal lives, which if you go back and look at newspapers and magazines 50, 60 years ago, wasn't there. So I think that's changing. And the conversations parents and children have has probably changed now from what it was a generation ago.
Okay, really, really interesting stuff. Thank you very much indeed. Alex and Lemba, thank you.
Pleasure.